Well, good day. Welcome back to the Ramble Room once again. I'm here with Diane and with Sarah. Joe's taking some deserved time off.
Is it deserved?
Obviously, the audience thinks so. All right. So, we have yet another candidate for U.S. House of Representatives with us today. Marissa Selvig is here. Welcome to the Ramble Room.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're glad that you're here with us. Have enjoyed speaking to you a couple of times and hearing other interviews with you, so I'm looking forward to this one. I guess the first place to start is, who are you? What are you doing?
Well, my name is Marissa, as you have already said. Last name Selvig. I am running for this office, and I'm very excited about it. I am ready for government to change because it is a mess. And I'd like to get in there and bring in some tough kindness and some virtuous principles and practical budgeting and try and help save the country for our children and our grandchildren.
All right. You have children, I've heard?
I do, yes. I have four children. They are girl, boy, boy, girl, 13, 11, 8, and 6.
So they can be by themselves for a little while without causing consternation.
Yes, they can. Just, and I've got an amazing husband, so.
You must. Give us three priorities, three things in a little bit more detail that you know, maybe this is the thing that riled you up, that got you interested in running, that was the last straw on the camel's back, if you would.
All right. Well, there's a plethora of things why you run for office. But I would say the three main things that are really important to me are, number one, the budget. To go right along with the budget is tax reform. And then I would say one of the issues that we're facing right now in America is obviously immigration. So I think that's a very important issue. So do you want details on those things, or do you want to ask questions?
Sure. No, go ahead and give us just a minute or two on each of those things, what your stand is, and that'll prompt some questions, I'm sure.
So, as we all know, the debt is approaching $29 trillion. We're well up into the 28s by now. And I was reading an article just yesterday that said there's a study group out there that said the real debt, with all of the unfunded liabilities from Social Security and Medicare, is like $123 trillion if you add all that into it or something like that, which is just an unbelievably terrible number.
It's not even fathomable, is it?
I know. It's not even fathomable, considering that what a trillion in years, if you took the amount of seconds, a trillion seconds is like 31,000 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's just an unbelievable number that you can't even wrap your head around. And, you know, should we try? I think we should. And I think the budget is part of that. And so I want to get in there and really shake things up with the budget and just propose a lot of cuts, because there's so much pork in the budget. I really looked hard at HR 133 from last session and all the money that was spent in willy-nilly places. And so it was pretty crazy. And as part of that, you know, I've had other people ask me, well, what would you cut? Well, I would love to see K-12 education ended. I know there was a bill for that this year where they said, let's end the Department of Education. Well, I agree with that. I would co-sign a bill like that. Kick it back to the states and make the states be in charge of it all, because I think local control is best. But that would save a lot of money, because we spend billions of dollars on education from the federal government for running that that department as well. We all know that bureaucracy takes up way too much space.
Exactly.
Yes. And so another thing that goes right along with that, cutting things, kind of goes right into tax reform. Let's say the IRS, it takes about, let's see, in last session's budget, there was $11.9 billion just for running the IRS. Just for running the IRS. Isn't that lovely? And so,
you thought that certain criminal activities were illegal, didn't you?
Yeah, right. We all hate the IRS, okay? Nobody loves the IRS, except for the people who work there, I'm sure. So I, for one, am in favor of the fair tax. And that the fair tax is really revolutionary tax reform, and it would get rid of the IRS. You know, people talk about defunding things all the time. Well, let's defund the IRS. Mm-hmm. And And so I am a big proponent of the fair tax. I think that that would help our economy. It would free up, you know, everybody's paycheck, and they would be able to decide how much they pay in taxes by how much they buy, since it replaces the income tax with a consumption tax. And so it would be great for our businesses to not have any overhead taxes to worry about. And can you even imagine if there were no corporate income taxes, how many businesses would want to move here?
Well, I would contend that there's no such thing as a corporate tax, because you can't tax a corporation. Probably agree there. One of the advantages to that fair tax is that the infrastructure, that's a popular word lately, but the infrastructure is already in place. You could defund, abolish the IRS, and those who are already collecting sales taxes of various levels in different places, just add one more layer to what they're doing, and boom, you're done.
It would be so easy. And so I've been in a lot of conversations with the fair tax guys. Have you ever watched their podcast?
I have not.
They are fun.
We've been talking about fair tax since before anybody even heard of a podcast. So.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing to me. I'm a relatively newcomer to the fair tax, and I think it is the most practical tax reform that I've ever seen. And as you well know, since you've known about it for a long time, it's the most researched tax reform. And I am all about practical. So I like practical budgeting. I think that the fair tax is practical. And I suppose that goes into the next part where I talked about immigration.
Before you do, though, you said something in there that caused a question. I'd like you to elaborate for just a second on why a consumption tax is better than an income tax.
Well, I like the idea of a consumption tax because then, as the fair tax works, that you are responsible for how much you're putting in. And it doesn't tax your income right off the top. My husband and I were just having a conversation about HSAs today because we were talking about healthcare. And I said, we wouldn't need to have HSAs if we were taking home all of our paycheck, because everything would be pre-tax dollars. And you could, the beauty of it is that it doesn't tax savings. It doesn't tax investing. You know, for those of us who want to be responsible, we can do that with our money. We can help ourselves before we help the government. And wouldn't that be nice?
It'd also be nice to leave a little bit for your kids.
Exactly. And not have it taxed away when you die.
Precisely.
Yes.
Okay, you were about to go on, and please do.
Oh, I was. I was just going to mention immigration, because that's such a serious issue that we're facing right now in America. And the amount of people that are continuing to come over the border is just, it's really tragic. And I find that it is interesting that we don't apply our laws properly, because it is a felony to cross the border illegally. And, why don't we enforce that law? It makes no sense to me at all. But I have, I feel like my ideas for immigration are kind of radical. I am in favor of stopping immigration, period, for a time. Just pausing all immigration.
That's historically been done any number of times, kind of to figure out where we're at and to allow those who have come in recent waves to begin to blend into the melting pot and become Americans.
Exactly. Well, and that's why I think we should do that. But in today's super polarized society, that really is a radical idea, even though it has been done before and is very practical. Because it isn't, the Democrats think it's so compassionate to let everybody in the country. Well, no, it's not. It's not compassionate to the children who are getting dropped over the fence. It's not compassionate to the veterans who are homeless on the street and American citizens who can't find a job. It isn't compassionate to the infrastructure and the systems in those cities, those border towns, to try and handle all the people that are coming in, or to the border agents who have to do three jobs now instead of, two. It's not compassionate to anyone. So I think it would be good for us to pause for a moment so we can come up with a plan.
I hear you. I happen to agree.
Yeah.
Marissa, would you please tell us why you're qualified to do this?
Well, I believe that I'm qualified because the Constitution doesn't say you have to have any kind of fancy job, any kind of fancy degree to be in Congress. I am a very logical person. I like to look at the facts and you know, see all of them laid out and make wise decisions based on those facts. And I think that that's how Congress should be run. It shouldn't be run by...
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, it would be nice. You know, it would be nice. I think if we could get people in there like me who just want to analyze and have real debate and do real legislation instead of all of these, well, I want to do the fancy act or whatever. You know,
I want to make billions.
Yes, and then they just pass on their act onto the bureaucracy, and they don't do any real legislation. And they don't do, you know, the debate, obviously. You know, okay, I was watching the debate in the business meeting on HR 1 that they had a couple of weeks ago. And although it was very polarized, I thought that they were having good debate. And that's something that I have never seen, a back and forth in debate like that. And so I thought that was very interesting. It was the Senate Rules Committee run by Amy Klobuchar. She is the chair of that committee.
That you so, said chair, not cherub. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm just making sure.
Not cherub.
Okay.
Definitely not a cherub. No. So I think that we could do that. And you asked me, how do I think I'm qualified? Well, I have held elected office before. I was a member of the Pavilion Town Council. I was elected in 2016. And then I was appointed unanimously to the mayor position in 2019 after a sudden vacancy from the mayor who had just been elected. I've got good ideas, and I want to use those.
Do you have some other good ideas that we didn't ask you about? That you're burning to tell everyone.
That I'm burning to tell everyone. Well, I have some ideas that aren't going to make me very many friends. Go ahead.
I always thought that before anybody is allowed to make a new law, you got to repeal 5 other ones.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
It would be interesting. It'd be interesting to see how many laws on the books we're actually using and we're actually following. Wouldn't that be interesting?
We're not even following the big ones.
Go ahead.
That ties back to your immigration thing. You know, the answer is not to ignore the rule of law. If the law is a dumb law, if you disagree with the law, try to change it.
Exactly. And so that's one of the things I'd like to see. I know this would take forever and a small army of people to do, but it's the bureaucracy. It's a small army of people. Right. It would be interesting to systematically go through all of the code, all of the U.S. code, and look at all of the laws and say, which ones are we actually following? And then do one of two things, repeal them or implement them and make sure that we're doing them properly. Right. I think that would be interesting.
Makes things a little more efficient, I think.
Well, it might take somebody's entire lifetime, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't start.
Yes, I agree. Well, and especially if we have lots of people working on it. I mean, if you think about all of the bureaucrats and all of the people who are working on other things.
Give them something to do.
It would give the IRS people something to do if we had the IRS, right?
There, she's got it all figured out. Nobody actually loses their job.
That's right. Well, they could do it for free for all of the taxes that they've taken from the people. I said we could just stick it to them a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually have two questions for you. One kind of comes on the heels of the fact that nobody is very impressed with the person that you're running against. Not that we want to name names and pick on anybody because it's just too dang easy. But what makes you think, knowing what we know about the swamp that is Washington, what makes you think that you would be more effective than the people that have held office there before?
Well, that's a really great question. And I'm going to just talk to you here while I think about it. What makes me think that I would be more influential? Is that what you said?
Effective.
What makes me think I would be more effective? Well, I would say that, number one, I got a really, really intense prayer life. And I like to work with others. And so I think I am one who likes to listen to people for what they're really saying. And I know that that is not popular amongst Republicans. It's not popular among some Republicans in Wyoming to think about the idea of working with Democrats. But I think that if we want to move the country forward, and try and get back to some of those more conservative principles and get back to the Constitution is to just have real conversation with people on every side of the aisle. You know, and obviously some things you're not going to agree on, but there has to be something that you that we can come together on and move forward. And I think that it's important to listen when people are talking to you and ask the right questions to make sure that you're understanding where they're coming from. And then at the same time, share your side of an issue with the facts and just, you know, work it out in that way. I think there's so much, like I've said a lot of times already, there's so much polarization. People don't want to listen to each other right now, but I think that I can help that because I'm good at communication and I'm good at listening and getting people to talk.
Well, I would have a comment on that before she goes on to her next question is that there's often a lot of talk about moving forward. And mm-hmm. the first thing I think about that is that if you're standing on the edge of a cliff, forward might not be the best idea. So what exactly do you mean by moving forward? Because in that same sentence, then you said going back to conservative principles. So are we moving forward or backward or up
well,
or down?
I guess I don't like the idea of I don't like the phrase moving backward. And so when I say moving forward, I mean moving forward towards conservative principles. Like if you're on the edge of there's a meme that I saw that had one of those, it had a road and then it had two directions. One was constitutionalism and one was communism, you know, and the mm-hmm. I see the cliff as like there. You can go right or you can go left. Mm-hmm. And so you move forward going right or you move forward going left. And obviously we don't want to move left because that would be, that would take us right off the cliff because
right.
really
okay.
that doesn't go left. It just goes off the cliff. So what I mean by moving forward is I mean moving forward towards a more conservative, more constitutional form of government, which, yes, you are correct. It does mean looking behind us at history because we need to look at the past in order to learn from it and move into the future with those lessons that we have learned from the past.
Well, that is what conservatism is. What are you conserving? The right way to do things.
I'm sitting here looking at this from the perspective. I first became pretty interested in national politics in the mid-70s. And I remember the Carter administration very vividly. I remember speaking in speech classes in high school and railing against the direction that the country was going. I have watched intently what has happened to America over the last, let's just say 60 to 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of talk about we need to join hands across the aisle and move forward together. And what I have seen is in the last 60 to 70 years, that has just taken us closer and closer and closer to that cliff at mm-hmm. different rates of speeds, more directly or indirectly. So what do you say to some old salty crotchety, cranky person like myself, who's pretty sick and tired of reaching across the aisle, doesn't really give a rip what a liberal progressive thinks. Is it just my time to hang it up or what?
No, because I think as much as there are liberal progressives, I think that this 5-month Biden administration has really shown how crazy their ideas are and how radical that ideology is and how it will take us off the cliff if we go that way. And I think that there are more moderate Democrats than we know about and more independents. And not that I don't want to ignore those people because those are American citizens just like you and I. And I think that we can come together on constitutional issues if we bring out the history and we talk about how it is supposed to be and where it got turned around in the opposite direction and how what we're witnessing really is globalism and a move towards, you know, communist ideas.
I think, Marissa, that is an excellent answer. I think that it's something that has to happen every 20 years or so. It happened during the Carter years. They elected Carter and everybody, the backlash was just staggering. And Reagan comes along. And then we got to try it again with Barack Obama. And, oh, no, this isn't working. This is horrible, horrible, horrible. We back off again, elect Trump. And then there's another wave of, well, maybe we got to try that because Trump's nasty. And the last few months have shown a lot of people a lot of things and woke them up, I believe.
And it makes sense that there would be moderate Democrats out there who that would be able to work with us, because they're also being silenced.
Agreed. They are. And they don't like it.
Well, it seems like it's a little off topic, but getting to my second question.
I'm
a young mom of young kids, and I am in a position where I also have to run a business at the same time. And I understand the logistics of trying to balance those two. So in your mind, where does that balance come in, and how do you justify putting this in your life when you still have little kids at home?
You know, that's a tough question, one that I've wrestled with. I've been thinking about this since 2018, late 2018, early 2019. And I didn't think that I would take a step towards moving for this office until after my kids were grown up. But this last July, I got a call from the Lord, really. The Lord spoke to me about running for this office last July, and I live with a yes in my heart towards him. And so I am obeying to the best of my ability. And he has given me this newfound passion for politics that is so much more intense than it ever has been. And one of the things that I wrestled with the Lord about at the very beginning was, what about my children? How can I leave them? I've been working part-time, you know, super part-time, and been a stay-at-home mom most of this time. I do have a college degree, but we moved here to Wyoming, and I put all of that aside so I could be with my kids. And the Lord is so faithful. The Lord is so faithful that I just felt him say to me, Marissa, they're not your kids. They're mine. They're mine anyway. And they're going to be fine. You obey. And so I said, okay. through much weeping and tears, he's so faithful. And so I have full and complete confidence in his faithfulness to my family.
Do you know, have you met Blake Stanley?
I have met Blake Stanley, yes. Yeah. I met him at the Carbon County deal when they centered Liz Cheney.
Yeah, we interviewed him some time ago because, you know, he ran last time. And so far as I know, last time I talked to him a couple weeks ago, he's still planning on running. And he says the same thing. He says, I don't really know why I'm running. God just told me to do that. And I guess I'll say the same thing to you as I said to him. It may well be that God plans to work a miracle. And I think that's what it would take for anybody right now. But
I agree.
But on the other hand, a lot of people who are interjected into a race or into some sort of a discussion are there not necessarily to win, and I don't want you to admit to that. They're not there necessarily to win, but to put some ideas on the tables, to gain a little bit of traction, to begin to understand. You know, I ran for District 29, Wyoming State House last time, and gained quite a bit of traction, but I gained a whole lot more knowledge about how to go about this and what it involves. I think you have to look at this, and I hope that you do look at this in a long-term perspective.
Absolutely. I do. You know, when the Lord calls you to do something, you obey, whatever the outcome is.
It took Moses 40 years.
I'm in it to win. That's right. That's right. I mean, I'm in it to win it, but we'll see.
Yeah.
It does kind of pose an interesting question to a lot of women out there who do have kids at home. We're taught in Scripture that our place is in the home. But it also seems like desperate times call for desperate measures. And when we're looking at that long-term situation, how far do we let things go for our kids before we have to be the ones to step in and do something? And I'm still kind of the mind that, you know, everybody points to Deborah in the Bible and says, well, see, she was kind of in charge for a minute. Yeah, that was a sign of judgment. So what does it say about the United States that women are having to leave their homes? Women like you who were stay-at-home moms, what does that say that we have to leave our homes and leave our kids and step up and do what hasn't been able to be done yet?
Well, I think the Lord is moving in interesting ways. There's so many things happening. There's so many things happening on a daily basis. And I think that the society that America has moved, you know, we've moved so far left and so progressive in the last, even 10 years, we've gone so far where people are just comfortable and they don't, you know, they aren't thinking about the future. And I I think sometimes about, you know, when I talk about the budget, I think about the lack of forward thinking of the people who've been there for too long, like the Pelosi's, the Bidens, the Schumers. They've been there for so long that they don't even think about what they are doing to the future generation of children in this country. They also, you know, they're trying to move us too far left, obviously, because they've lost touch with reality. I was listening to President Biden, which I don't like saying those two words together.
Oh, it is tough, isn't
but
it?
It is hard to say, but I, you know, I do it because out of respect.
Yes.
But he said recently, he was talking about gas prices and how important it is to get our gas prices down because gas prices are important to those who make, you know, not a lot of money. And I thought to myself, oh, really? And then he said something about how gas prices matter to, you know, families that make $80,000 and $90,000, like that wasn't a lot of money. Like $80,000 and $90,000 for a family wasn't a lot of money. And I'm like, he is so out of touch.
Yeah.
$80,000 to $90,000 for a family is a lot. That is a lot. We don't make that much, and we have four kids and two of us, and we're just fine. So I think it's so important to just look at things from a bigger, wider perspective.
Take some reality with you.
Yes, exactly. You know, I am the people. I'm not, you know, I like to say that I made a video in my garden recently when I was sitting out there weeding and digging in my raised beds in my front yard. And I was just sitting there thinking, you know, I'm not any different than the people of Wyoming. I am the people of Wyoming. I am. I raise my children here. I work here. I love here. I serve here. I worship here. And, you know, that's what I think I can bring to the table is I understand what it is to be a regular citizen of Wyoming, and especially one who has raising in the middle of raising children. And so I think that's important.
So speaking of that, there's a debate that's been raging, not just in Wyoming, but along a number of conservative lines for years. And I just want your take on it.
Okay.
9mm versus 40 cal versus 45 ACP, which caliber and why?
Good question.
Oh, that's good. Oh gosh. You know, I don't know. I have a 9mm. That's what I like to shoot. So
it's probably a little more comfortable. And with some of the rounds
hands,
they've got
so,
now. Yeah.
That's right. I have small hands. So we have when Biden, let's say, won, quotes, unquote, on January 3rd, my husband went out and bought two more handguns. So I have a little, the one I like is our little Hellcat. It fits nicely in my hand.
Cool. Yeah. I've got two guns, one for each of you.
Nice.
Well, anybody else have any other questions?
Yeah,
anything that's...
I'm happy to answer anything.
I know. I think I've heard pretty much what I want to hear, but... You know, as soon as we say goodbye and disconnect, then it's like, oh, man, I meant to do that. So I can stall for a minute or two, but...
That's all right.
I think what's going to really matter in the coming months is the number of people, Wyoming people, in the field running for this office. And we're going to have, you know, the voters are going to have to make a choice between several. Why should they choose you over all of the other choices?
Well, I think that I care about the people of Wyoming. I care about the budget. And I think everything comes back to the budget in Washington, no matter what we're talking about, even if we're talking about defense, because I know that there's a gentleman running, a couple of people who are former military, right? Mm-hmm. And even when we're talking about defense, what does it come down to? What we're spending on defense. And so the budget is so important to me that I want to go there and try and make really hard, positive change in the budget. And we're all going to have to tighten our belts because it's going to be a bumpy ride if you get me in there with the budget.
Well, I wish you all the luck with that. I ran on that for the state house, and you'd think in Wyoming that would just be like, you know, a cakewalk getting in on that platform. And
well, I'm ready to make some enemies, and I know I will, because I don't believe in the amount of spending we're doing, and there's a lot of things we spend on that I don't agree with. And so As well as that, you know, I'm running this campaign on what I want to offer the people of Wyoming, not on anti our current representative, because, you know, there's more to politics than just that person.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And so I want to show people what I want to bring to the table and what I will vote for, like fair tax and term limits, you know, that kind of stuff. So.
You say you're ready to make some enemies, and I guess this is just a caution from an old dog in an old fight. I got in a governor's race for Wyoming, 82?
Long time ago.
Somewhere in there. And the candidate that I was supporting was actually doing pretty well. He was gaining some traffic some traction. He was showing up in the top three all the time in the polls and sometimes leading some of them. Mm-hmm. And pretty quickly, the newspaper in Casper, and I won't mention the Star Tribune, but that's the one it was.
Or as David would say, the Red Star.
Yeah, exactly. The Red Star. I don't want to be labeled as copying David, but he does a great job.
I know, right?
He does a great job.
He's got good little quippy names for things.
Yes. Well, they came out with this story entirely fabricated and completely derailed. I shouldn't even say completely derailed, but derailed enough our candidate's chances that he was virtually taken out of the race. And then after it was too late, it's one of those classic deals. They print a retraction on page 6 and everything goes over. I am glad that you have faith, and I'm glad that you feel that you are obeying Christ, because without him, nobody stands a chance.
That's right. He is our strength, and our, you know, I stand on Psalm 62, my victory and honor come from God alone.
I can't cite you the book, chapter, and verse, but the one that I stand in is, do good to those who despitefully use you, for in so doing you will heap coals of fire upon their head.
Amen. That's a good one. That's another good one. They're all good ones.
We have,
come on, they're all good ones.
We have a sign in the Ramble Room that I wanted to cite where it came from. It's Ephesians 6:12. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. Against
principalities and powers.
Yep. Against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And I, for one, personally wish you well in this race.
Thank you.
Greet your husband and your children. And I hope you're in this for the long haul, because it's going to be a long haul. So
It will be. I'm getting started here in June. I've got my first, I'm calling them candidate conversations.
Good.
And it's going to be in June.
That's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for being a part of the Ramble Room. I'm sure it won't be the last time, and I look forward to seeing you on the trail.
Yes, and may I give my website?
You may absolutely self-promote.
Would that be all right?
I'm sorry that I failed to ask you for that.
That's all right. So my website is www.selvigforcongress. That's F-O-R, the word, selvigforcongress.com. My Facebook handle is @selvigforcongress. I'm on Twitter at Marissa Selvig. And that's where you can reach me.
Thank you, Marissa Selvig. It has been great to speak with you, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Thank you so much. Bye.